Hey, what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. Joining me, as always, of course, my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Trance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. Coming to you live from the Kintec studio, Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. A big crossover day today with Donnie and Dolly coming up in about 10 minutes. Drance is on the road, so we are testing the Wi-Fi internet capabilities of wherever Drance's hotel is right now. We got the video call up. We're going to cross our fingers that we don't get any technical difficulties. Drance, how are you doing? Don't wave your hand at me, Dom, as if it's never happened before.
I think I'm fine.
Yeah, it's working.
How do I sound?
You sound great.
Coming at you from the bottom of a tin can. I've arrived in Boston. It's a beautiful sunny day. Gonna eat a lot of seafood with Ian McIntyre a little bit later, and looking forward to, you know, hanging out with Donnie.
What could be,
I guess, Rick too.
What could be better than eating a lot of seafood with Ian McIntyre? What a day! What a day you have planned. So we'll do the crossover in a few minutes here, and then of course Jason Buchla will join us at 1 o'clock as he typically does on a Wednesday. Lots to get into today. Canucks beat the Hurricanes 3-2, and of course, the big story coming out of it, in his Canucks debut, Elias Lindholm with the immediate impact, scoring twice, both tip-ins on the power play, playing that net front role. And I gotta say, I mean, even just beyond the two goals, and I know Rick Tocchet kind of echoed this or said this after the game as well, like, look, leave aside the goals. I think you really just saw kind of instantly how he changes the makeup of this team, having Elias Lindholm as an option, because plays in all situations, you know, led the forwards in ice time. His line ended up matched up against the Sebastian Aho line for most of the game. And then he's out there to kill the game in the final seconds. And so, in effect, what happened here with this trade is you take a guy in Andrei Kuzmenko, who was, when he wasn't in and out of the lineup, he was kind of playing fourth line minutes. And now you've gone and replaced him with somebody that instantly in game one against a really good team, Rick Tocchet is using as one of the kind of three key forwards on this team. And we all knew it was going to be a big change, but I think seeing it really drove home just how much flexibility and how much value Rick Tocchet's going to be able to get out of that upgrade.
Yeah, and it was seamless. Like,
yeah,
right off the hop, it felt seamless. With some knock-on effects down lineup, right? So you noted that Elias Lindholm played the most minutes, mm-hmm. 5-on-5. On Pettersson's wing, they drew the Aho matchup. I wondered if that would be sort of what both coaches agreed with as their first choice matchup earlier in the week, and that's how it played out. So you have Lindholm, Mikheyev, and Pettersson, up against Aho, Teravainen, and Martinuk. And, you know, that line plays 12 minutes. It's one of the highest shot volume lines in the league in terms of how frequently they stack up heavy shifts and test goalies, you know, not necessarily with the highest quality stuff, but certainly at high volume.
Yep.
12 minutes on ice in that matchup and two shots on goal for the Hurricanes. You know, the Canucks yep. didn't generate a lot 5-on-5. With the Pettersson line on the ice against Aho's group, but like, this is the Hurricanes. It's hard mm-hmm. to generate, right? I mean, it's it's not unusual for them to surrender less than 20 shots in a game. And in fact, they surrendered less than 20 shots in a game last night. But they generated nothing. That to me is, you know, maybe a defensive fastball on the Pettersson line that it hadn't had. Certainly with Andrei Kuzmenko on the wing, but really with any formulation yep. we've seen, whether it's Lafferty or on and on, is there potential for that to be sustained? Could we see that be a line that Tocchet trusts in matchups when it's his choice? More than just being like, yeah, I agree with mm-hmm. Rod Brind'Amour's selection, which is what we saw last night, driving that sort of matchup game himself. I'll be curious to see. And then on the penalty kill, you know, he basically took JT Miller off of it. I mean, that's what we're seeing, right? Like, JT Miller had been sort of PK2 and the guy who jumps over the boards first to win the draw.
Yeah.
Well, it was Lindholm taking the draws and making the quick change and then coming back out with Neil Simon in Miller's spot. Well, that's a big help. I mean, all of a sudden you're reducing Miller's ice time, right? And sort of focusing him on the areas where he makes the biggest difference, which is, you know, offense and just in terms of being like a willful physical presence on the ice. You know, if that's a two-pronged thing, right? Miller plays less shorthanded and maybe he gets easier matchups 5-on-5 as a result of the Lindholm ad. Well, that's a knock-on effect that amplifies, you know, in some ways, like the danger level that the Canucks can offer their opponents, you know, through Miller as an attacking piece. I mean, that's all upside.
I thought the matchup thing that you highlighted was really interesting as well, right? Because as you said, look, it's Rod Brind'Amour making these decisions with the Canucks on the road. But just the fact that Tocchet didn't feel the need to try to go away from those matchups at all. Like, he was just happy, like, okay, if that's how you want to play it, that's fine. And I think it really does put Tocchet in the driver's seat, and it kind of makes the other team react to the Canucks rather than vice versa. You know what I mean? Maybe that wouldn't have been Tocchet's absolute number one first choice, but it wasn't something that gave him any stress, clearly, because he didn't try to get away from it. And so, you know, that meant Jordan Staal was playing his line, kind of the shutdown guy for the Canes, was playing against JT Miller in that line. And, you know, I thought the Miller line did a pretty good job in that situation. And it just, again, it's the kind of thing where against the Hurricanes, you end up with, you know, it's not as if you're getting either of those lines soft minutes because the Hurricanes are such a deep team. But against other teams, they'll have to make difficult decisions about, okay, who do we put our best players up against? And that will benefit the Canucks. And I just really, it felt to me like the Canucks were kind of dictating how the Hurricanes had to use their players and how they had to deploy their players. And then they can just kind of sit back and see what the other team does and adjust there. But, you know, it is going to be really interesting when Tocchet has first choice to see what they do. But as you said, with Lindholm out there and the Pettersson and Mikheyev against the Aho line, they did a good job. And if that continues, I mean, that is a huge, huge weapon for Rick Tocchet to have to deploy later in the season.
Yeah, well, and we'll get our first taste of how much this new Canucks lineup causes their opponents to react tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because this Bruins team deploys the top six with a loaded top line sometimes, but they'll also go away from it. They'll also play Pasternak with Zacha. So we're going to get an interesting look into, you know, does this Canucks lineup with Lindholm added sort of cause a coach to fatten their lineup intentionally, which, you know, is something the Bruins do situationally and based on their matchups. Or will they try to, you know, will they try their usual top-heavy lineup against Vancouver? I think that'll be an interesting data point for us to monitor tomorrow when the two teams take morning skate.
What do you think of the game overall? Because I thought, you know, obviously Carolina pushes really hard in the third period, which is no surprise. But I thought just in general, I mean, that was a pretty high-tempo, tight-checking, relatively intense game for game one out of the All-Star break. I don't think you saw a lot of, like, All-Star doldrums from either team.
Well, I think there's a benefit to playing a game like that where the pace is really high and the amount of physical engagement is high.
Yeah.
You know, like you really get to, you know, feel it in terms of getting a feel for your hands, making a ton of small plays, like lots of short area plays, but nonetheless under pressure, right? Having to try and battle 50-50 every 5 feet of ice.
Yeah.
You know, and the game being played at high tempo. Like, I feel like that's a good way to sort of break the doldrums of the All-Star break, as it were. In terms of the Canucks' overall performance, I thought they were fantastic for 25 minutes. Do you still have me?
Yeah, I got you. Don't worry.
Okay. I thought they were fantastic for 25 minutes. Like, really, really good. As good as we've seen this team play, you know, and consistent with what we've seen over the past month. I thought then for about 15 minutes, Carolina was like taking control of the game. Canucks, though, in that time, you know, get the second power play goal. Briefly, the Canes level it up again. And then there's that weird bouncer off the stanchion. Miller capitalizes. And then the Hurricanes pushed, and that's what you'd expect. Like, you expect the Hurricanes to push. I don't think the Canucks were overwhelmed by any means. But to me, it was like there was 25 really good minutes, 15 less good minutes, but the Canucks took the lead in those 15 minutes and then did a good job holding it. So strong first performance coming out of the break.
All right, it is time for the crossover with our pals Donnie and Dolly from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV. You can check it out every Monday to Friday, 10 to noon. We are now joined by Don Taylor and Rick Dollywall. And a lot has happened since the last time we had a chance to chat with you guys. It wasn't too long after that that the Canucks go out and make the Elias Lindholm deal. Our first chance to chat since then. So, I mean, look, where I'm asking this question after he goes out and scores two goals in his debut and helps the Canucks beat the Hurricanes. But what do you guys think about the trade?
Me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Sorry, we had an echo earlier, and everything seems to be just fine now. Well, yeah, like you say, it's easy to say, you know, all these positive things about Lindholm after last night. And, well, I'm sure the Flames are pretty happy with things, too, with what happened with Kuzmenko last night as well. And as they discover not only what he does on the ice, but his off-ice personality, which is off the charts. But, hey, look, guys, how much was Kuzmenko going to play in important games down the stretch? Yeah. How much was he going to play in the playoffs? Would anybody have been surprised, given his relationship with Rick Tocchet, if he got scratched in playoff games? No. So they really, you know, they replaced somebody in the top six who wasn't really in the top six with a legitimate top six player. Yes, they gave up some prospects, but they're able to keep, you know, Vilander and Lekaramäki and put Colson. Have to give it a thumbs up even before last night.
I love the fact they identified this player early and they had a mission to get him, and it was around the 30 game mark that they said, you know what, we're going to put it all together for this guy and try to get him. And I just love the fact that, hey, this is the guy we're going after. They got him, and I don't think they've gave up a king's ransom to get him. I still think Boskevich is going to be a player someday, but that's a story for down the road. You know, the fact they had to put him in there is obviously you're not going to get this guy for cheap. You identified him. He's one of the top players available for the trade deadline, and you guys got him. You got him early. These are all staples of Jim Rutherford and the work he's done in the past at trade deadlines. And you got to look at Jim's work, not only in Carolina. Everybody talks about Carolina, but Pittsburgh as well. If you think you got a shot to win it all, well, you got to do the due diligence. And he did that. And this is a great message to not only to the fans of the city, the players in the dressing room, but also to the rest of the Western Conference guys, that, you know what, hey, Vancouver just went out and did some really good work, got one of the top guys, and now let's see how the Oilers and Vegas and other teams, Colorado, how did they respond to what Vancouver did? So I just love the fact they identified him early and they got him. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, and guys, we were told, I forget who it was, Rick, who was on with us. Maybe it was you, Thomas, but at the 30-game mark is when they decided to go out and get Elias Lindholm, to go out of his way. Maybe it was you, Thomas. But they were 29-1 at that point. That was after that 4-0 win over Florida, and they'd just beaten Carolina and Tampa Bay. These guys have been around a long time. You know, Alvin and especially Jim Rutherford and Rick Tocchet. So, obviously, at that point, with that record, which is really impressive, and winning those games against those really talented teams, they thought to themselves, this is real. Let's go out and target this guy. He's our number one target. And they got him.
And to your point, Rick, about, you know, sending a message and the fans getting excited, I think I know another person who's probably really excited about the trade, and that's Rick Tocchet. Because as you were saying, Donnie, you know, you go from Kuzmenko, who's kind of playing fourth line minutes, even when he's the top six, a healthy scratch sometimes. Then you bring in Lindholm, and game one, not, you know, he's playing on the power play. He's out there taking draws on the faceoff, and he's out there killing the game in the final seconds, right? So it's not just that you brought in somebody who can complement Elias Pettersson. I mean, already, Tocchet is leaning on this guy in really key situations against a really good team in the Hurricanes.
Yeah. Yeah, what happened at the end of the game? I mean, Andrei Kuzmenko is in the locker room around then, isn't he? You know, in a game like that, like honestly, he's not nowhere near the ice at the. I don't mean to knock him, and he had a great debut, but just him and Tocchet, that they weren't going to coexist.
No,
and for them to get a player like Lindholm who they can trust in a situation like that, and he scores a couple of power play goals, it was really impressive. I know it's a long way to go, but really, really impressive. Probably the best Canucks debut that I can remember, and you guys can correct me if you want. 1987, Greg Adams. Anybody?
Oh, Greg Adams.
Four goals his first game as a Canuck against the St. Louis Blues at the
Hard
Coliseum.
To beat that, Donnie. Greg Adams.
Yeah, what a player he was.
Oh, boy, was he ever.
One-year-old Jamie remembers it very well.
Okay, stop it. Just stop. Okay.
So you were 5 years older than Drance?
No. when do you think Drance was born?
Not long ago. Not long ago.
Not yesterday, though.
Rick, I'm curious to get your take on this, and we'll look forward for the most part. But, you know, one benefit of getting this done early, you know, the obvious stuff is you set the market. Right. You identify a player, you go get him, you give him more runway to adjust, you strengthen your team and on and on. But in terms of clearing the air by moving off of Kuzmenko, given that it clearly wasn't working, do you think there was a organizational sense that needed to happen, that if it festered, it could impact the team?
Yeah, well, and you're dealing with an agent, you know, that you're talking to all the time, and Dan Milstein, right? And Dan fought hard to keep I can't tell you guys enough how Milstein behind the scenes fought super hard to keep Kuzmenko in Vancouver. Like, he just did not want to see that guy go. At the end, he had no choice but to finally figure out, like everybody else in the city, it was not going to work with Kuzmenko and Tocchet. He just would not play the way Tocchet wanted him to play, and it just was going to end up in a divorce. But I can't tell you guys enough how hard that Milstein, he didn't want this to happen. He fought really hard behind the scenes. Every time that Kuzmenko got healthy scratched, I'd text Milstein, and he'd say, nope, it's going to be okay. I'm going to talk to the Canucks. We don't want to trade. Andre doesn't want to trade. I don't want to trade. And he fought hard to keep that guy in Vancouver. But at the end, and by the way, this will not affect Kuzmenko being traded, will not affect their relationship with Milstein. He's still got a ton of clients in Vancouver. It's a management group that likes him, and he likes Vancouver. It's not what Milstein wanted. But in the end, I think everybody finally said it was time to move on.
Lindholm, it was interesting to hear him talk yesterday because, you know, he was talking as if everyone knows it's been a struggle for me offensively, right? Like, he was doing the answers when you have a good game, but offense has been in short supply for you all season and maybe your confidence hasn't been very high. And that's a normal tone. Like, I'm used to talking to players in that tone after big games. But I've fallen a little bit out of practice because there aren't very many Canucks players for whom that would apply this season. It almost felt like Lindholm didn't know, like, how it worked around here. You know, it's like, oh, no, this is going to be a regular thing for you now, man. You're going to get a lot of goals here. do you think that's going to be an adjustment for him in terms of the opportunities he's about to get?
Well, he's... We're sort of going back to the Goudreau year with Kachuk. And, you know, 40 plus goals and being a Selke finalist. I would think at the very least he would be thinking team first. He's in a better situation here, and that the situation he's been presented with Pedersen as his center or his winger, however things work out, center last night, although Lindholm was taking some faceoffs, that he's bound to have better offensive numbers. And being on the number one power play. He's got to be pretty excited about it. You wouldn't know it after the post-game interview. He seemed pretty reserved, but that's just the way he is. How can he not be excited given the situation with the team and then individually?
Look at the power play last night, 2 for 3, right? He's going to be on a power play in Vancouver that is obviously a huge part of this hockey club. He's going to play with better players, and he's going to play on the number one team in the NHL. I mean, deep down, he's got to be absolutely the happiest guy in the world that trade.
Sorry, Rick, but also forget about Mikheyev and Pettersson. Hard to do that. But did you not get the sense last night, and you forget about this sometime, defensemen are part of the offense, that there's something going on between him and Quinn Hughes. And I think that first goal especially, because you know, I'm coaching minor hockey right now and have been for a while. You tell your kids a million times, the defenseman, do not cram those shots into the shin pads. Shoot wide on purpose, and yet you should have forwards that are able to read that, and they can wait for the puck to bounce off the boards or deflect it as it's going wide. They read each other last night on that play. And that was, that's the first game. And I thought that was really, and of course, the second goal was somewhat similar. Yep. I think that's really promising as well, along with who his line mates are up front.
Well, it's another benefit, too, to getting him in early, right? Giving him those extra games to build that chemistry into the playoffs. Yeah. And, you know, I thought, obviously, he's skating with Pettersson and Ilya Mikheyev last night. And it was interesting to hear Rick Tocchet, I wouldn't say criticism of Mikheyev, but acknowledging that, hey, this is a big stretch for him. I'm going to be watching him. We need to see if he can fit in with that line. And, look, we all know he's, recovering from surgery. That takes time. He might not have quite the same jump, but in kind of game one of that new look line, I thought it was a pretty good showing for Ilya Mikheyev. I think if he has more performances like that, he's going to lock down that job next to Pettersson and Lindholm.
Well, his first shift right in on the forecheck created turnover in the corner. But the thing with Tocchet is he's already talked to Garland about he's called that on the left side. He's called that as an opening. And people have to audition for it. And if Mikheyev's not cutting it, Tocchet's not going to sit around and wait 15 games. He's already talked to Garland about possibly moving up. But, Donnie and I were talking about Garland and Besser and how life changes in 12 months. And Garland, it's earlier because it was right out of training camp, I wanted a trade. He actually never did ask for a trade. But look at Besser last year to this year. The Canucks are very lucky they didn't trade these two guys. Look at the year Besser's had. I heard Besser, last year his agent was talking to a ton of teams. There was a couple of situations where there were serious discussions, but it never got done. And then Garland this year is just absolutely – look at his first period last night, crossbar and, just generating, moving your feet.
He drives the line.
He drives the line. The biggest thing, Thomas and Jamie, is I enjoy this, this season because they've got 10 free agents. That's half the roster. 8 are UFA and 2 are RFA. I can't tell you right now what this team's going to look like next year.
Well, more reason to go after Lindholm, right?
That's it.
And maybe somebody else. And then the other thing, too, Thomas, I think you pointed this out, but Joshua last night as well with the block late versus earlier in the season when Tocchet was questioning his conditioning. He's going to be a UFA if I'm not mistaken.
He is. He's one of 8 UFAs on that roster.
He's been really impressive. Made a lot of good plays.
Guys, Joshua is third in the NHL for hits, second in forwards.
Yeah.
He had the big chance in the first period, too, that Garland set up. That line, once again, one of the most consistent. When I think about that game, though, gentlemen, a lot of really good teams lost last night, right? Like, coming out of the break it's Boston. Easy to have something of a letdown. And the Canucks, the effort level, the amount of fun, just the vibes around this club seem very high. I mean, you bring up the change in Garland. We're here in Boston, his hometown. He's hosting the team tonight.
Yep.
Like he's hosting the team for lobster rolls and stuff tonight. It's clear that this is a tightening group. Do you think we see it in performances like that last night?
Well, I got the sense that they were being outshot. What, they give up 12 shots in the third period? But you kind of got the sense, even watching on television, that they enjoyed that.
Yeah.
That this is what it's going to be like a lot. We got a target on our backs. We're going into the playoffs, undoubtedly. And it was like it just seemed like they had fun holding on to that one goal lead. They didn't seem like they were just hanging on. They didn't seem really desperate. They seemed like they were having fun doing that. Like they were having fun at work. And now they got the lobster rolls coming.
9 days off, guys, and then they go into Carolina, outshoot the Canes 12-4 in the first period. That's impressive to me. I mean, they were ready. They were focused. It was a workmanlike effort. There's a reason why, Thomas and Jamie, there's so many people think the Canucks are a Stanley Cup contender, is because they play like it and they act like one. And, I mean, coming out of the All-Star break, those All-Star guys, you know, Tocchet told them, first practice in Carolina, you guys can take off, and they said there's no way. There's clearly a great dressing room. That's why I know everybody wants to see the Canucks acquire four or five guys. No. This is a tight-knit group. Tocchet said it on Toronto. You don't want to upset the apple cart. You have come this far, 50 games, they're the number one team in the NHL with this group. Why not, reward these guys by, you know, keeping this group together? Maybe they add a depth defenseman or maybe a depth forward, but man, oh man, I mean, this group together has been sensational all year.
Yeah, I know, Thomas, you and Ian were talking to Tocchet last night about, hey, you know, isn't this great that it looks like they haven't lost anything over the 10 days they had off, yeah, or whatever it was for the All-Star break. And just the way the schedule has worked out for them, this is a very good team, and they come back after the All-Star break with all those players in Toronto for the All-Star, yeah, All-Star weekend, and they have a game against Carolina in Carolina. That's a good hockey team. And then the next night, Thursday night, they take on Boston. So if they were sleepy at all getting back, you know, from All-Star break, that goes out the door playing those two opponents. I think that's a perfect setup, as it – maybe it didn't seem like it when you look at it, at the start of the season. That's a perfect setup for them playing those teams. You got to be awake against those guys.
Absolutely. And everything's coming up roses for them, guys. They got a kid in Abbotsford right now, the, yep, American League Hockey League MVP in the All-Star game. That guy's going to have a tough time getting a sniff in the roster. Pod Colson's down there. I mean, it looks like these guys, I mean, try to crack the Vancouver forward group is very hard. It's who comes out? Name one guy you would take out right now for a kid in Abbotsford. Well, nobody.
Not for a kid in Abbotsford.
But it's as you say, though, Rick, you don't know what this team's going to look like next year. Like, that's where, you know, the Bane, yeah, story becomes really interesting.
Okay.
This team's going to need affordable depth.
That's why training camp.
That's,
yeah,
what I'm saying.
That's why you have training camp, Thomas. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you definitely. Hey, the Canucks are not re-signing eight UFAs. Take that to the bank.
Nope.
They are going to need Baines and Pod Colson and some of these guys. And, hey, here's the other one for you. Casey DeSmith makes $3 million a year. I'm having a tough time seeing that him getting that again in Vancouver. Artur Seelovs, is he ready to step in and be the backup? There's so many questions for next year, but right now, enjoy what they're doing. It's pretty incredible.
I did want to ask you about Baines, Rick. As you mentioned, AHL All-Star Game MVP, point per game down in the AHL. As you said, though, it's not as if there's an obvious spot. They've been so healthy this year, they haven't even had those chances for call-ups. Yeah. Now, I did see, I think just since we've been on air, they said they sent Linus Karlsson back down to Abbotsford. He's been up and down all year, obviously, yep, but what do they like? Are they comfortable just having Arshdeep Baines there in Abbotsford for the rest of the year? Would they like to get him a call up at some point? What's your sense of what their plan is for Baines?
Jim Rutherford told us on our show, Donnie, that if Pod Colson stays down in Abbotsford all year, he has no issues with it.
Yeah,
it's develop, learn, get better. They don't want to bring him up for a game or two like Karlsson. He just keeps coming up. One game goes back. Yeah. They don't want to do that. They want to bring up Baines and Pod Colson when they're ready to be everyday NHL players.
Yeah, and go back to Pittsburgh. Sorry, Rick.
Yeah,
go back to Pittsburgh with Rutherford and Alvin, who would have been around Rust and Gensel, and how those players percolated in Teddy Bluger. In Wilkes-Barre, yep, they percolated and helped that team win a couple of Stanley Cups, and I'm sure that's the model they're trying to fill. These guys look like they're ready, but, you know, and Detroit did that years ago too, Thomas. You might remember that as well, Jamie. They did that years ago as well, like percolate in the minors. Don't bring them up too soon. And meanwhile, things are going really well for the NHL team. The formula looks really good right now.
So he comes up, and he's going to play 9 minutes, right?
Yeah.
No power play. So why not stay in Abbotsford, play 20 minutes, power play, penalty killing,
yeah,
and then everyone's going to bitch that they called him up and only played him 9 minutes, right? How does he – is he – what's his fit? Is he a top six or bottom six? You know, there's so many questions, but they're doing the right thing. Stay down there at work. And I'm going to tell you something else. You know, Tocchet gets all the credit, but I was told that, you know, do not underestimate what the Sedin twins have done – you know, in Abbotsford and Vancouver. You know, when they were first hired, everyone thought it was just a gimmick or whatever, just given. No, they were not pushed to the side. These guys are very important to practice. And also their skills guys, Seth Skoski. That guy's really good.
Yogi.
Yogi, yeah. So I was told, look at Thomas laughing.
Yeah.
Yo, we're going with Yogi. I was going to say, Yogi is a lot easier to say. Make it easy on yourself, Rick. Yogi.
Yeah.
Just listen. Won't say his last name. I'll just say Yogi.
Trance calls him.
I'm trying to tell a story, like, Thomas.
Trance calls him Big Y.
Look, I was close. I was in the neighborhood. Listen, I was told, do not underestimate. There he goes again laughing. You laugh like a hyena, Thomas. Let me finish.
I'm sorry.
Don't underestimate what the Twins are doing. Don't underestimate what Yogi is doing.
There you go.
And this coaching, this is the best group of coaches. And also Jeremy Calton. I think it's the best group of coaches the Canucks have had in a long, 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 long time.
All right.
Are you happy?
We got it out. We did it.
Yeah,
we finished on a high note. Guys, this was awesome. Thanks for doing this as always. We look forward to catching up next week.
Awesome,
adios.
Guys. Thank you so much.
Right. Later. Hi. That is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly on
Chat TV. I felt like a contestant on Hot Ones.
Just trying desperately not to react.
Yeah, I'm trying not to laugh, but I'm like, oh, it's building.
Yogi Svajkowski? How do I say it?
I just not like Rick.
Yeah, okay, whatever I do, not like that. But anyways, yes, that's the skills coach we're talking about.
I think it's Svajkowski.
Svajkowski, okay.
Yeah.
If only there was a Slovak on the show that could answer the question.
Jump in. You don't have to be passive-aggressive about it. Are you going to tell us or not?
I like seeing you guys squirm a little bit.
Okay. All right. Well, we're super, super past our break. We're running super late here.
That's
so.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So we will take a break. Some good text coming into the inbox. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Jason Buchla will join us at 1, but up next, we got an open segment here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. All right. Don't mind me. Just vibing. Vibing to the tunes. Banger. An absolute banger. The knockoff Fleetwood Mac. You can't beat it. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. The hotline is brought to you by Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. The first call, the only call. This text came in. Rick sounds like Frank Costanza when he gets fired up from Todd Has Bad Takes. I like that comparison because there's a similar quality of like rapid acceleration in terms of being annoyed that they both have, where they'll be just perfectly normally talking to you and then instantly at a split second's notice be yelling about something surprising out of nowhere. Both Rick Dhaliwal and Frank Costanza.
I like it.
Frank Good comparison. Dhaliwal. Frank Dhaliwal, indeed. Or Rick Costanza, even. I like that as well. We should talk a little bit. We were hyping it up yesterday, right? Big day of hockey. Canucks Hurricanes, I think, lived up to the billing. Was a good game, fun game, intense game. And then obviously the second half of it, the one that everyone in hockey was watching, the Golden Knights and the Oilers. The Oilers looking to tie Rick Tocchet's Penguins 17-game winning streak for the longest in NHL history. They do not do it. The Vegas Golden Knights snap the streak. And I got to say, like, there's obvious Canucks implications here, and we can talk about that a little bit in the whiteboard later on in the show as well. But my biggest Canucks takeaway is how many times over the last couple of years, Drancer, and usually it's in the playoffs, but sometimes it's after a big game in the regular season, have we watched a big game between two good teams and you come away thinking like, man, I could not picture the Canucks playing in that type of game, right? Last night, I'm watching the Edmonton Oilers and the Vegas Golden Knights, two really good teams, go at each other. And that was a fun game, intense game, playoff type atmosphere. And I was sitting there thinking, you know what? I could absolutely see the Canucks hang in this type of game. Like, that was the big takeaway for me. I was watching and thinking, you know what? This is a really good game. I'm not taking anything away from either of those two teams. They're playing at a high level. But for the first time in a long time, watching that happen, I was like, you know what? And I have a pretty high degree of confidence the Canucks could be right there with them in that type of environment.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. It wasn't one of my main takeaways. I didn't think about it in that form. But, you know, I think that's the other side of the coin with what we're talking about, you know, the way that this Canucks team has played, especially over the course of the past 5 weeks, and them having real ceiling. Right?
Yep.
The sort of ceiling that certainly I didn't expect them to coming into this season. So, you know, consistent with that takeaway, it makes sense. Yeah, I don't think they looked like they'd be out of place in that contest by any means. I thought it was a great game, by the way.
It was a really good game.
Yeah, the two data points that sort of stuck out to me was Edmonton loses and their streak breaks, but I thought they were the better team
100%
throughout that game. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought they were pretty unfortunate to lose, which is scary, right? Because I also, the other takeaway for me is, you know, the thing about Vegas is they haven't performed like an elite team at any point this season, mm-hmm. right? Like, I know they got off to that hot start, but it was mostly, you know, goaltending and finishing fortune. We kind of had a sense that that wouldn't last. At no point have they put together like a month-long stretch like the Canucks have even in January where it's like, oh, wow, you know, that's not just winning games. That's really high-end hockey. That's the sort of hockey you can play if you've got a shot. At no point this season have we seen Vegas play like that. Not for an extended stretch. What we've seen is occasional blips, occasional yep. games where they decide to get up for it. We saw one in Vancouver in late November. We saw one when they hosted the Rangers the other week. We saw one last night, and we saw it without Theodore or Jack Eichel in their lineup. And that sort of remains the big data point for me. Like, I think, you know, I think Edmonton is probably, in my mind, the best true talent team in hockey. But if there's another team that I'd put in that mix, it's Vegas. But not because of what I've seen so much as because of my faith that they can turn it up and be more like the team they were in the spring last year when it really counts, when the chips are down. I think there's a switch that they can flip. And
oh, we just lost you, Drancer. I don't know if there's something came unplugged, but we can't hear you right now. All right, we will we'll try to get Drancer reconnected there as he's talking about the Edmonton-Vegas game last night, which was a really entertaining game and actually big spot for the NHL because, of course, that game's in Vegas, one of the most marquee regular season matchups I can recall in the NHL in a long time, and it's Super Bowl week in Vegas, so you actually had a ton of pretty high-profile media people in Vegas, like non-NHL media people going, attending that game, tweeting about that game, talking about it, and it ended up being a really good product. So, I mean, that's just kind of a little side thing, but a nice night for the NHL in that respect. We'll get Drancer back on the show here in just a second. I did think it was interesting, you know, we didn't... As so often happens on the crossover, I have something I want to ask Rick Dhaliwal about, and he just jumps right to it and gets to it because he wants to get something off of his chest before I even have a chance to go there. And, you know, he was saying, like, look, they went out and they made the Lindholm trade. Everyone's saying, oh, what else can they do? Who else can they add? But at this point, you've already taken your big swing. Do you have to just let the vibes of this group stay? And if they're playing like this and if they're this tightly knit, how much risk is there in switching things up? And to me, because you can look at it and there's still obvious spots on the roster where you could say, you know what? You could see an upgrade there. Could you flip out a Zadorov for a right shot defenseman who's a little bit better, a la Chris Tanev? Could you bring in somebody who's a more clear cut top six fit to complement either the Miller or Pedersen lines? There's still areas, you know, bump Neil Zaman out of the lineup potentially. There's still areas where you can imagine the team improving. I will say the thing I like about another of the things I like about going out and getting Lindholm done so well in advance of the deadline is now you have the next month here to really gather information about how your team, okay, how your team's playing, how your team's performing, and, you know, more than that in general, specifically how guys are fitting into different roles, okay? Because now all of a sudden, you know, you put Lindholm with Pettersson and Mikheyev. That's a very specific role that Mikheyev is going to be asked to do, and you have a chance here to see if he's able to do it. I think we have you back on the line here, Drancer.
You do, yeah.
All right, fantastic.
Sorry, the point I was trying to make was I'm watching that game and I'm thinking, man, if this isn't two of the three best teams in hockey, it's certainly two of the five. And with the way that this is trending, with the Canucks widening their, you know, vice grip on the Pacific Division, like, they're almost certain to play one another now. You know, not almost certain, but, like, what? Well, I mean, we'll get into it a little more in the whiteboard, but I'm sure you've already looked at it.
I'm not a statistician, but it's got to be at least around a 50% chance of them meeting.
Oh, I would think higher than that.
Yeah.
Got to be.
Yeah.
Got to be. I mean, the chances of them finishing first or second got to be, I would put it closer to like 4 and 5.
Yeah.
Like that back of the napkin, my gut is that it's almost an 80% shot that they'll finish. Okay, so just pulling up Dom's model here really quickly. 75% chance that one of Edmonton or Vegas finishes second in the Pacific, right? And a 71% chance of them finishing third. So yeah, like pretty close to 75% likelihood that they bump into one another in the first round. And that's silly. That's going to be the most outrageous sort of first round matchup that we're going to see in any division all year. And for it to be in the division where the Canucks, should they be able to hold on to first place, and they're certainly tracking well to do so, like, man, that is the sort of break, you know, that the deep runs can be built off.
Yeah, that's huge. That's one of the big implications for the Canucks from last night with Vegas getting that win, because, of course, they pull closer to the Oilers. They keep the Oilers from, you know, getting any closer to the Canucks. And by the way, now officially, the Canucks have outpointed the Oilers since the beginning of December, despite Edmonton going on a 16-game win streak in there. So a 16-game win streak.
By total points or by?
Both. So Canucks have 34 34 points in 21 games. Edmonton has 32 in 20. So Canucks have an 810 points percentage. Edmonton has an 800 points percentage in that stretch. So the Canucks have
that is unreal.
Stretched their lead during a 20-game stretch where Edmonton had a 16-game win streak, which is absolutely unreal.
Yeah, I mean, the Canucks haven't lost in regulation since, St. Louis. So St. Louis and Philly.
Yep.
Dating back 2 months.
Yeah.
Dating back to like when you first were opening your advent calendar. Yeah. Like you have to go back to the Devils game in early December to find the third time they lost in regulation over a 2 month stretch of hockey. I mean, it's crooked. Like at this point, you know, that was the 14th game in a row that they've picked up a point. Like this team is managing their losses, and more often than not, they're winning. This is a heck of a run.
They also they lost to Philly by 3 goals. The only other time, the time before that they lost by more than one goal, you have to go all the way back to November 30th against Vegas. So that's from November 30th to February 7th, one loss by more than one goal. And there's a bunch of shootout and overtime losses in there as well. So it's like they're winning often by multiple goals. When they lose, it tends to be by an absolute nice edge. It's like all the hallmarks of a really, really good team are coming up for the Canucks right now. I did just want to make the point, you know, Rick towards the end of the crossover was saying, hey, okay, you go out, get Lindholm. That's great. Everyone wants to see them make 5 trades. How much of a risk is there now at upsetting team chemistry? And I think that's another benefit, as I was saying, that the team has from going out and getting Lindholm so early is, well, you have this month of games now to see how the team's performing and to kind of gather information as you try to balance, you know, the value of maintaining that chemistry versus going out and looking for a marginal upgrade. And, you know, I think the Ilya Mikheyev thing is a perfect example. All right. You've got him now on a line where I would say he's in more of a position to succeed as the complementary guy with Pettersson and Lindholm. And now you have the month of chances to see, okay, is he the guy there? do we try an internal option, or do we need to have to look for an external option? You know, you've got Nikita Zadorov kind of playing third pair minutes right now. You've got a month to see, is this how we want to run our defense? So I'm certainly not ruling out a change. I don't think the chemistry thing means you can't make a change. It's something to take into consideration for sure. But I just like that they have this chance that, okay, we really like our lineup right now. Let's see how these guys do. And then let's take stock, you know, first week of March and see, are there any trouble spots that we need to address before the deadline?
Yeah, especially because they made their move and addressed what they saw as their biggest need, quite rightly, in my opinion, which was getting additional play driving help for Miller and Pettersson, right? Now, Pettersson's getting the help for now, but as we talked about in the first segment, right, if you've got Lindholm playing Miller's role on the PK, that's easier sledding for Miller. Fewer minutes, less strain down the stretch, less moments in a stationary defensive situation in zone where you're likely to take bumps and bruises and have to block shots, right? Plus, you know, the possibility that if they end up doing more hard match stuff with the Pettersson line, you know, I think JT Miller and Brock Besser can go wrecking ball on the bottom end of opponents' lineups. It, you know, if that's the chance the Canucks are going to try and carve out for them, I mean, that sounds very, very interesting to me. So, you know, I think there's, you're seeing the benefits to Miller and Pettersson. And oh, yeah. In terms of the marginal upgrade stuff, you know, I think it just depends how far down your lineup you're looking to upgrade. And that's sort of where I think we're talking about, right? As you know, you know, I don't know that we're talking about another top six winger necessarily, but like another guy with size to give you an option in various points in your lineup. You know, that to me would still fit the bill. Some additional puck moving insurance, that to me would still fit the bill. So we'll certainly be interesting to see what the Canucks do. I definitely don't think they're done, but I do think they're very much going to be, and I mean, I've been reporting this for a week, in let's see where the dust settles for a bit here before jumping back into the market.
I mean, great returns on that in the first game. And again, just huge. A smart move, I think, to kind of give themselves that time, right? So you're not making Lindholm, you know, you make the Lindholm deal on March 6th. It's like, well, we have to decide right away. Now, do we want to do more? Now you get to see, okay, let's see how everyone slots in here. We've got the lineup, you know, structured a little bit more how we like it. We've got a chance to gather some more data before the deadline.
How many Canucks fans, really quick, I know we've got Books on the other side, but how many Canucks fans saw Kuzmenko score on, like, his first Calgary Flames shift, rolled their eyes and thought, like, here we go again, but then because it's 2023-24, right, because it's this charm season, it's like, not only does Lindholm pull one back, but he then scores again.
Yeah. I was so happy that Lindholm scored, honestly, because I was like, oh, man, we're not going to have to do this thing where we're, like, counting Kuzmenko goals versus Lindholm goals. Like, come on. I don't want to do this. Come on. And then Lindholm scores twice. It's like, thank goodness. We're saved.
The trade was won that night.
Exactly. We won the trade. Thank goodness. All right. We'll take a break. On that note, Jason Bukala from Sportsnet joins us, as always, on Wednesday. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People's Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650. Is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and right now we go to the Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning hotline, where we are joined from Sportsnet's NHL coverage and a former NHL scout as well. He is Jason Bukala. Jason, thanks for doing this, man. How are you today?
Good, fellas. How are you today?
We're doing very well. We're very excited that the post All-Star break schedule is on now. It was a long break there for the Canucks, but they get back at it with a win in Carolina last night. And Elias Lindholm instantly effective for his new team, scoring two goals on the power play beyond the goal scoring, which of course was really nice to see, and I'm sure felt great for Lindholm. What did you think of his fit and playing next to Elias Pettersson last night in Carolina?
Seamless fit. So guys like me who do this for a living, and we don't just look at, you know, goals, you know, four and stuff like that, you know, which is great, you know, like he's around the net, those tips around the crease, you know, he's got that skill set, guys, and he's had a below average kind of overall, his body of work has been average offensively this year, so that was really nice to see him get off the schneid last night in a hurry. But defensively and the way he tracks, like now we got a guy on the right side, or probably a right shot that can win draws on his strong side, you know, effectively in the defensive zone, especially like the one time on the penalty. I was breaking it down today, and every one of his faceoffs he matched up against either Aho or Staal. So Staal's one of Carolina's best veteran faceoff guys, but as we know, Aho is, you know, the play driver for Carolina, right? So that gives you a real quick glimpse into what his role can be, matching up against the top offensive talents and key defensive situations. I thought it was a seamless fit. I don't know, everything that it's becoming redundant. I know, we've been talking about this forever now, but it seems like everything that the Canucks touched so far this year turns to immediate gold, so let's hope it's a sign of great things to come.
Well, even it's so funny, right, because Lindholm's having trouble putting the puck in the net, shooting a career low percentage, and then he comes to the Canucks and boom, two tipping goals right off the bat. It's just as soon as you're in a Canucks sweater, you're going to start scoring goals, apparently. And you know, he led the forwards in ice time, as you said. You know, he's out there taking draws, he's on the penalty kill, he's killing the game late. How much of a domino effect does it have when you add somebody who's kind of an immediate high-usage player like that, who you can use in every situation? How does it kind of trickle down and, you know, all of a sudden everyone else in the forward group gets slotted in maybe a little bit more appropriate spot for them in the lineup?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely what's happening here, and that's why the acquisition was made, right? Like we kind of talked about it, trying to identify that second layer in the middle of the ice, and don't be mistaken, like they really have the opportunity in the third period if they're chasing a game to load up two lines, right? Like really effectively here and you know, come at teams a variety of ways. So the trickle down effect, you know, a Suter and a like those other guys are kind of I like the balance of the lineup when I look at it now. I know that in the third period some guys had their ice time peeled back, which is fine. I mean, you know, Carolina's a good team. Their record could be better. Their goaltending's been well below average on balance for the season. So that's a tough team to play against. That's a tough rink to play in. So I think the trickle-down effect is evident in terms of balance. But I don't know if you guys have noticed or not. You know, when trades are made and teams are or players are excited about an acquisition, to a man, you can see it in the eyes of the Canuck players where they're like, you know, I've played against this guy for years. I know how hard he is to play against with the detail that he brings to the game. And I'm happy he's on our side now because like even JT Miller went on last night, I was watching late, you know, and he called him a complete player. Mm. And so that gives a lot of confidence in the room. If everybody's thinking, wow, that's something we can trust even further for our group.
Books. Just in terms of, I want to ask you about Archdeep Baines, right? Because he's a player, there's a lot of interest in him locally, given where he grew up, which is Vancouver. But also, you know, he's had this meteoric rise from being an undrafted guy to, you know, winning. He was the all-star of the AHL game, all-star MVP over the weekend. I mean, what have you seen? Is he on radar, the radar for you as like a potential call-up option in the playoffs or at least a guy who should be in with a bid to make the team next winter, next fall?
Yeah, he's an ace at worst here come playoff time for me, depending on what's going on, you know, with Abbotsford. I think he's absolutely earned that. you know, this is a guy that was a slow burn in the Western Hockey League. But, you know, here's something that stands out for me with players like this, guys. When you have a player who plays in major junior hockey with the same organization for his entire career, okay? And let's not forget that that organization is owned by a Sutter. So it's not like, you know, you have to earn your stripes to stay here in Red Deer, right? When they look at him on balance value-wise, and yeah, we had the COVID year, but he clearly saw what this guy was capable of, and it was like he was grooming him along for that, obviously, breakout year in his OA year. Now he's just continued on at the American League level, and it's interesting to me that, you know, he leans playmaker for me, like, across the board. Like, I think that's his MO. But he, too, is a guy that the trickle-down effect of the organization, in terms of detail, he's not going to be a heavy, hard guy. He's like 6 foot, I don't know, 185 or something like that. But he's tracking and doing all the right things in all three zones. So he's giving the big team all the right reasons to trust him when they have to call his number.
And with a player like that, once, you know, it's interesting to me because with a player like that who's had these 2 years where his development is so significant, you know, they get to an age where it's time for them to begin to, you know, step up and challenge to make the NHL if they're going to be a player. But on the other hand, it's, you know, still there can be some fits and starts. Even the smash success stories, like even your Carter Verhaeghe class, don't come up once, right? Like there's usually still a path to run here. How do you balance organizationally being patient with a guy whose development path is so steep over the last 2 years?
Well, I think that's really interesting. And I would counter it by saying that imagine if he was a college player and we were circling that, you know, and saying that he's a free agent candidate at the college level, because he's right in that category, isn't he? Like those college guys that start to hit at 22, 23 years old. I'm not right. So much worried about the timeline. I'm okay with the arrival. Like it's not an age-driven scenario for me. It's a results-oriented business. I'd like to see him especially give us food for thought, and I think he's already accomplished this, but you know, we've got some contracts to sign in the horizon. So, you know, we got to manage our money, and it's all going to become asset management. And where's he fit in? Can he play this role? What's his number going to be looking like? And we all know what it's going to look like, you know, like down the road, we're talking about what, like a $900,000, $1 million player. And if he can add secondary scoring and do a bunch of the other things, I don't care when he arrives, as long as he's got that slot. And I think financially, you know, that has to factor in too, because we're going to have some big tickets that are going to arrive on the books. Now, I'll also say this though, fellas, that keep an eye on this name, because, you know, teams will circle around right now. You know, I don't know what they're going to do with what they got left on the books, the Canucks at 1/8 and change, I think. I don't know what they're going to do there, but, you know, asset wise, like, there's a team out there in the league. You don't think that Baines could be playing in San Jose right now or in Anaheim? I would argue he wears an NHL uniform with those organizations right now.
That's fascinating, right? That because, I mean, that you go from being an undrafted WHL free agent signing to potentially being an asset a couple of years down the road. I know you're in you're at the Five Nations tournament doing some scouting for the draft eligible players this year, Jason. And, you know, we've already seen the Canucks trade their 2024 first round pick, and look, they certainly expect that to be in the back, you know, third or so, or even more than that of the first round. And I think there's a sense that, you know, into the 20s of this first round, the talent drop off is going to be pretty steep, maybe steeper than in years past. Is that your sense as well right now?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a fine line because I've done this for so long, and I know that these athletes have prepared for so long for this moment. So I'm not trying to, you know, dummy it down or make anybody feel bad, but that is the reality. So this is the NHL. It's a big business. And I'm here to tell you that the, you know, from arguably around 18, it starts to turn into a different type of draft than what we've seen in the last couple of draft cycles. So absolutely. And that's why, you know, the Canucks, you know, in the trade that they made with Calgary, the asset management that was involved in that deal, I really liked it because of the fact that you know, none of their high end current crop of prospects had to be sacrificed. That first rounder that they let go out the door, it's going to be a high first or late first round pick. And based on value of what I'm feeling right now today, you know, that's a maybe in the NHL going forward.
How do you think it could change what other teams try to do or are willing to part with, or what selling teams are targeting, right? If, you know, if there's a sense that maybe this draft isn't the strongest, could we see teams maybe try to target drafts down the road, the 2025 draft?
Yeah, so like if I was asked and, you know, I was in the war room, I would be punting it to 2025 and giving myself more runway for my staff and myself to continue to accrue more knowledge on you know, these the further outs. But I have to tell you, I would be dipping my line in the water for current prospect capital. And especially, I guess it depends where you're at in your process too. So if you're San Jose, you're in a full-blown rebuild. So it's okay to punt it to 2025. If you're the Calgary Flames, for example, and they make their next move, call it Hanifin, Tanev, I don't care what it is, they might be looking to acquire a higher-end prospect because they're in a retool, not a rebuild, and they want a guy that might be able to make the roster sooner than later because – don't forget, you punt it to 25, then you're looking, depending on his timeline, you know, is he a college guy, is he a European, whatever he is, you're talking another 2 years at least. So it's a long way down the road. So it's going to be fascinating to see how different teams approach it. But for me personally, I'm punting it to 25 if I'm a late-round acquisition, first-round pick. My preference, though, is I'm trying to go after higher-end prospects.
Books, at the tournament, the Five Nations tournament being played right now in Plymouth, one guy who's there that I'm interested in hearing you talk about is Cole Iserman. So, you know, for those of us who aren't like Jamie Dodd, Gavin McKenna sickos, right? there was a time where there was a time where I would have told you that I thought Cole Iserman was going to be, you know, the most likely challenger with Macklin Celebrini to be first overall in this draft class. That's just not how it's shaken out. How low has his stock gone at this point? Like, are we going to get to the point where, you know, he may not even be a top 10 guy?
Fascinating. You know, my colleagues on this side of the aisle, you know, in media, I'm, for whatever reason, Drancer, you know this better, like, I've been a hard ass on this kid, unfortunately, for him. I really like him as a player, but compared to some of my other colleagues, he's dropped to 9 for me on my list. He started the year at 2. There's a potential that he could go up or down, but here's the thing, guys. Similar to Arthur Kaliev in L.A., who, when he's not scoring goals, he becomes a huge liability everywhere else on the ice. That is Cole Iserman. He's a pure goal scorer. 6 foot, 196. He's got 51 goals in 48 games coming into this tournament overall for his whole year. In the USHL, which is, you know, the junior league down here, you know, he's got 16 and 14, but he's only got 5 apples. So, He wants the puck all the time. He works it off the flank. His defensive detail's got a long way to go. When he's engaged, he can track up and down. But as we know now better than, more than we've ever known, like, if you're not ready to track at the NHL level, like, you better learn in a hurry or else you become expendable. Like, Kuzmenko is in Calgary because he couldn't play the way your coach wanted him to play. Not because we didn't know he was a goal scorer. We already knew that. So Iserman's, he started at 2. He's dropped. He's going to have to come back to life for me here down the stretch for me to trust his projection.
And with a player like Iserman, who's, you know, in some ways, like, in hockey circles anyway, been a guy to watch since he was 16. Like, I always wonder about the, like, Couturier, Chikorin class guy. Like, is there a level to which a guy gets over-scouted and people just see what he isn't, you know, as opposed to what he is? Is that partly what's going on, or is it more about how he'll fit in the at the next level, given, you know, some of the deficiencies?
Yeah, you know, that's that is an interesting point for our listeners. Like, there are players who come on the radar so early, and you know, the argument could even be made with Celebrini. So Celebrini, you know, what a lose-lose. It's a lose-win situation for Celebrini this year, because he's following Connor Bedard, and he's going to be the next number one. Like, that's a tough follow, right? But all Celebrini's done is continue to build up more and more equity, more trust in the way that he plays. This isn't, for me, a bias on Yzerman. I scouted him religiously last year. I liked him a lot in Switzerland at the under-18s for Team USA. He scored some big goals. He always wanted the puck. I knew what he was going to be. But the fact of the matter is, he's still the same today that he was last year on balance, for the most part. I need to see growth in other areas. For me, fellas, I'm stubborn. I get it. But if you can't skate, you can't think, and you don't have a relentless compete at the NHL level, your other skill attributes have a really hard time rising to the top. So I need them to start to tick off the boxes in those other categories. Like, look at Owen Tippett, fellas. There's a great example. Tipp could always rip a puck. He's starting to figure it out in Philly, right? But his model, his curve took a while. We knew that because we'd seen enough of the compete and how he could burn up and down the ice, but he wasn't doing it often enough. Now all of a sudden he's doing it, and look what you have in a player. So, you know, that's where I'm perplexed with Yzerman. But let's not forget, like, we drafted Tip. What do we draft him, Jancer? 10 or 11 or something like that in Chicago?
I think it was 10.
So Yzerman, yeah. And I've got Yzerman at 9 now. So I'm just trying to paint the picture how I feel about the scenario.
I wanted to ask you about a local product in this year's draft from Chetwynd, BC, Caden Lidstrom. Okay. He's 6'4", playing for the Medicine Hat Tigers in the WHL. And, you know, 6'4", putting up over a point per game, you see that kind of profile and you start to think, okay, this guy's going to go really, really high. How high could we be talking about here for Caden Lidstrom?
He's very likely going to be a top 10 pick. I've got him at 14 right now. And it was based off a couple of viewings before he got injured. He's out with a hand injury. It was based off a couple of viewings where I thought his push could have been a little bit better. I thought he could have been more consistently imposing. Now, having said that, his body of work's been excellent. He's a goal scorer, guys. This is power forward goal scorer. He'll extend plays, but he's not a natural playmaker off the rush. But he does have old school, too. He's one of those guys that if you're not paying attention to the neutral zone and he's above the play defensively, he'll close on you and he'll knock you right in your bench. Like, he's a big body. I love that about him. But you know what? I think he's this is top 10 potential. I hope he comes back from injury and continues to hit the ground running. Here's one thing I did do. I did do some homework because I was worried I was having a bias here for some reason. So I wanted to kick myself a little bit. And Medicine Hat's been having a really hard time matching up against teams like Saskatoon, for example, with the Fraser Mintons in the middle of the ice since Lidstrom's been out of the lineup. So that tells me something about his overall value. And perhaps I've been a little bit too hard on him, but we still have time.
All right, and I can't let you go without asking about his Medicine Hat Tigers teammate, Gavin McKenna. And we're getting very far ahead of ourselves here. He's 2026 eligible, but he first popped up on my radar. I mean, I think he debuted in the Dub in like late 2022 as a 14-year-old and immediately started scoring points. He's 16 this year, still has a couple years before he's drafted, 69 points in 44 games. Rare to see that sort of scoring profile. I mean, how much attention is he starting to attract in scouting circles around the industry?
I was excited when I got the note today that we were going to talk about this kid, because this is the next layer, fellas. This is the next really high-end player. Not only coming out of the Dub, but projecting a couple years out here to be that offensive talent that everybody is just gravitating to. So this kid's a stud. He's from Whitehorse in the Yukon. You know, I think he's number one in a couple of years. He's not draft eligible to 2026. Obviously, I'm going to learn a lot about players in that amount of time. But, I mean, you just look at – we talked about this before. I do things in segments. Like, his last 10-game segment was like 20 points and plus 8.
Yep.
Elite brain, He's light. He's like buck 65, 6 feet. He could literally play any position. He's so smart and so crafty. He can play the middle, play the wing. He could quarterback the power play on the back end. This guy's a stud. Like, this is a momentum guy. And going back to what we talked about just a couple of questions ago, it's going to be interesting to see how people start poking holes in him between now and 2026.
Well, that's a tough thing, right? Because you have this sort of performance early in your junior career. You've still got two more years. And next year, everyone's going to be looking at him and saying, okay, what are you going to do for an encore, right? And he could be in a situation where he has, you know, like 60 goals and people will be disappointed because the expectations get so high.
Yeah, I hope not. I mean, Willie Desjardins there in Medicine Hat. You guys are familiar with Willie. They're going to be real good in the next couple of years. They've got the Bashup kid, the Lindstrom kid, obviously McKenna. So they're on the rise. I know we're going to go here in a second. Can I bring up a kid here at the that I'm watching here at the U.S. program? I think you guys will be interested in because he's got a cool story.
Please do.
He's from Surrey, B.C. originally. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the E.J. Emery kid. He's playing for the U.S. national team program. He's a big right shot defenseman, 6'3", about a buck 85. He's lean, but he'll play out to 205, 210. His dad played for the BC Lions back in the day and met his mom. So that's how the dual citizenship came to be. He grew up, he played at the Burnaby Winter Club there in your back door, and he's down here playing for the U.S. team. I've got him at the very periphery of the first round, 32nd overall, but I thought that would be a cool story for your listeners. Sometimes you lose track of where kids go. He's landed right here. Here I am. He's tracking in a positive direction, and his roots were sowed, if you will, hockey-wise, through the BC Lions to his mom and right there in your back door. So pretty cool story.
Very cool. Thank you for highlighting that. I was not aware of the EJ Emery story, so I'll be tracking him for sure. And I love the report on Gavin McKenna. I was pumping my fist. I'm hyped. I'm hyped already. So thanks for doing this,
that
as
was
always.
Yours. Yeah, you always drop those ones on my lap, Jimmy.
I know. I figured I better give you a heads up on this one. Just I thought you'd probably be able to go there anyways because he's getting that kind of attention now. But I thought I better give you a heads up about this one that I wanted to talk about him. So I appreciate
it. That was a great one. I'm happy to do it. So thanks for that.
Of course. Thanks, Jason. We'll talk next week.
Okay, fellas, take care.
All right, that is Jason Bukala from Sportsnet's NHL coverage and also a regular contributor here for us every Wednesday, getting me even more fired up, Drancer, about Gavin McKenna and the future, the 2026 draft. I'm circling it already. I'm getting hyped. Got to target those draft picks. I might be talking to no one. I feel like we might have lost Drancer. That was very jarring there. All right, well, that's always fun. Nothing like just talking into an empty void where your co-host is supposed to be. Perfect opportunity for us to take a break here on the show. We'll try to get Drancer reconnected. And we will come back. We'll do the whiteboard.
You should break anyway.
On the other side.
124.
That's exactly what I'm doing. We'll take a break. We'll do the whiteboard on the other side in the final segment of the show here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.